702.
News and current affairs.
Professor Setulego Matebesi is my guest, academic head of Department of Sociology at the University of the Free State. Prof, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate your time. Human rights, this and that, whose perspective matters? How do you come to that that title, Prof?
Hi, good evening, Aubrey, and let me take the opportunity to also just welcome your wonderful listeners. Very difficult situation, maybe a little bit subjective, but based on what I had to go through as an academic, as a head of the department, at an institution which is regarded as racist. But yet what you go through, it's completely just the opposite. And when you start to try and embrace the individuals that you work with, our so-called activists will label you as somebody who perhaps do not understand where we come from. But also in general, I'm speaking to those individuals in our workplaces, public institutions, who try to breach this racial divide and then get labeled. We all know, and what I'm trying to do with this opinion piece, it's not to call for people to try to be passive recipients of what we're going through. If there are injustices, we need to confront them, even today. But this opinion piece just speaks to our collective agency to say, but are we just going to look up to all these institutions that have been established to promote human rights, or are we as individual citizens going to take a stance and protect what we have? So that's it, Aubrey.
Was that a reflection, perhaps on your part, on what human rights means, and especially Human Rights Day means? Was that the reflection? Was that the place where your mind went when you reflected on issues of human rights? What sounds to me like the dichotomy of realities in a context that is charged with a conversation around issues of how we deal with issues of racism and so forth. Is that the reflection that that surfaced when you were thinking about issues of human rights?
Yes, most definitely. Entirely, that was the primary focus of the op-ed, to say, but yes, we're talking about human rights, but there are certain organizations who wants to claim days like Sharpeville, and there are certain activists who wants to dictate how individual South Africans have to respond to issues of race and racism. But at the end of the day, we need to ask ourselves that in a diverse country as South Africa, when are we going to close? When will we have an opportunity to close the gap if there aren't champions who reach out to perhaps other racial groups, irrespective of the challenges that we face? So it has had to do a lot about respecting human rights, freedom of association, but also understanding that South Africa is a diverse country. And then even if there are challenges, we are not I'm not calling upon people now to become passive recipients of whatever injustices they are facing, but definitely focusing on how can we advance and protect some of the universal principles of human rights that we all know, that we need to freedom of association, and at least also try to bridge the gap between racial groups in South Africa.
Part of the reason why the University of the Free State became, I suppose, an attractor of the idea that it is a racist organization, and I suppose you want to really interrogate that very moniker, that very label, in the way that you've been thinking about this, is because we remember a very, very, very sad moment in the history of this country, and particularly the history of the university, when we saw young boys, young white boys, urinate into some food, and that food was given to black staff members. And that story became very, very, very big at a very interesting point in South Africa's transitionary period. And so, and many others, but I remember that to be a very, very big part of the reason why the label of racism on the university was bequeathed to the university. What do you make of that moment and the fact that the university became connected with that idea, and many other South African universities, but particularly those that have an Africana sort of background to them? I'm thinking about Stellenbosch, I'm thinking about Tukis, I'm thinking about Kofsis, I'm thinking about all of these universities that had their origin in deep Afrikanerdom, an Afrikanerdom that was deeply nationalistic and was, and many of these universities were understood to be the think tanks of how to effectively enliven the very policy of apartheid. How do you then, Prof, without being labeled an apologist for racism or maybe even apartheid, avoid that kind of labeling on yourself because of the reflections that you put into your opinion piece? And where do you want us to go as South Africans as you raise awareness around these issues?
A very profound question, Aubrey, and I have to admit I had several interviews since yesterday. This is the very first time where I need to think deep as to how I'm going to respond to this. And I really like it, because that's actually at the heart of my opinion piece.
Yeah.
If you look at the University of the Free State and anywhere else, I mean, if I just very briefly, if you don't mind.
Sure, sure.
Democracy has delivered us a president, which I strongly believe that should never have been a president. So where you work currently, Aubrey, and where people are currently working, there will be incidences of racism, blatant racism, which will be taken on. I mean, that for me was the worst. And I don't think any individual in his right mind would want to be associated with an institution which allows such acts. But we will never, because even tomorrow, we don't know how people will respond. And that is, I'm a sociologist, and that is one very, very fundamental aspect. An individual, human beings can today behave and say a lot of things, and then just in a completely different way. But it all depends on how public institutions like universities respond to that particular situation. And I can tell you, Aubrey, I've also been posed questions to say, but how can you work for so long at an institution that has been labeled as being racist? And it's very unfortunate, because people don't know what is happening at an institution. And that's at the heart of my opinion piece to say. But those who have been exposed to this kind of situations, and there has been a response. And sometimes when you try to address issues of racism, a racist act, that for me was a blatant racist act, and I strongly believe that to a certain extent the university tried to address that. I'm not a spokesperson of the University of the Free State, but I try to address that. But at the end of the day, where does it leave the individual? The perception will still linger that how on earth does a university student, let alone whether it's white students, and that's where the problem comes from, you still get families that will go out and tell their kids that, you know what, this is what we used to enjoy in South Africa. And we need to, we're yearning to that. And that's why you will find out these kids or learners or students will act that out. That was very unfortunate. But since then, the university have moved on. And there have been many other instances. And it doesn't mean even today there aren't acts of racism. And that's why I call in the opinion piece that we need, we as citizens, our collective agency to confront all these issues. All these events, not events like that, acts like that, blatant racist acts in our society needs to be confronted. But the question is, does that mean blacks have to do it on their own, or whites have to do that on their own? But when are we going to bridge the gap, especially in public institutions like university, where you find black and white? I know there are predominantly white universities still in South Africa, perhaps predominantly black universities. But fact of the matter is, universities like the University of the Free State has become multicultural universities. And the question is, until when are we going to operate in silos to confront this monster, a very traumatic situation? And perhaps that is the primary focus of my...
There are a number of schools of thought about the nature of racism. There are a number of schools of thought about how we have the conversation around racism. And what I'm sensing, Prof, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, is that you're calling for an acceptance of the idea of pluralism, the idea that we are a country that is made up of different experiences, that is made up of different understandings, and that we have a particular ill amongst many to confront in this country, and that is racism. And that cannot be done if we operate in our different silos. But if I can perhaps throw this thought at you and hear what you've got to say. Some have argued that the institutionalization of racism in South Africa through legislation during the apartheid era and the fact that it became so deeply rooted in South Africa's institutional operational machinery that it became normalized is because post 1994 we didn't confront racism with all the might that we could and name it for what it was and call it out in the way, in our desire to be more pluralistic, in our desire to be more accommodative of the other perspective. And what that did, some would argue, is that it gave racism a fertile place to grow under the guise of, no, this is my opinion, this is my perspective, and we are a pluralistic country. How do you respond to those who say this idea of pluralism is precisely what has made racism have the temerity, racists have the temerity to continue to be racist and support institutions and ideologies of racism under the guise of this very idea of pluralism? Prof?
A very profound question, very difficult to respond to, but I'm going to respond to your question in three ways. First of all, we don't call for people. We've got activists who strongly believe what you've just currently said, and we say let them continue in that way. We need to confront racism at all levels. There's absolutely no call now perhaps to rest on our laurels, because if you look at, I think it will be naive of anyone to say perhaps we've now, after three decades of our democratic dispensation, we've reached a situation where we can say racism has been confronted in South Africa, because in any case, the opinion is not only about racism, but this is at the heart of the opinion piece. So it's going to be very difficult. But what I was thinking about is to say, but in situations where people have tried to reach out and they've met each other across the racial divide, let us allow that, and let us stop labeling people who want to work together in a diverse setting.
Are you finding that to be the case? That people who want to work in a diverse setting are negatively labeled? And give me a sense or an example of that.
No. If you are negatively labeled, then and that's why I said you need to confront racism.
Yes.
The issue is not about trying to camouflage racism because of a diverse setting.
Yes.
But the issue is, and that's why the question, whose perspective matters? If there are individuals who have found one another in a highly racially intolerable environment, but there is a unit that have found one another, what do we do then when individuals come out and say, yes, I am black, I am white, but we have made a decision that we will confront whatever challenges we found in this particular institution, and not necessarily the University of the Free State, together, despite all the historical legacies and all that. Then the question is, why are we forever labeling such individuals? You know, instead of wherever we are facing injustices, injustices needs to be confronted. And that is what the opinion piece is calling for.
Sure.
And I wanted to come back to your fundamental question. As I understand what you mean, and I completely agree with you. There have been many instances where I think perhaps we've taken a back step, because about all these so-called call and proclamations of a rainbow nation. And we have perhaps forgotten that the struggle still has to continue in terms of fighting for racial equality and some of the injustices happening in our country. But there are also instances where, like for instance, in a small rural school, in a small rural town where a community across the racial divide have found one another. We need to support
I would imagine, Prof, that that kind of finding each other is the ideal situation. It is the ideal situation that must be encouraged. That is what we are looking for, I would imagine. But I'm also interested to hear from you, under which circumstances have you noticed or encountered a negative labeling of that kind of collaboration, cooperation across the racial line? And you're right, I don't want to keep this just about racism, because there are a lot of other social ills that South Africa has to deal with that that are of a human rights nature. I'm thinking about issues of patriarchy, for example. I'm thinking about issues of inclusivity in terms of gender issues. But I am interested to find out, where would we locate the negative labeling of those that have found each other across, specifically across the racial line, who are cooperating or working well to each other with each other, and them being labeled by whom and labeled as what?
It happens in many public institutions. We've done research on that. I'm tracing all the core leaders of community protest throughout South Africa. You name towns like Upington, Kuriman, Sasolburg, River, Sommer End, Grabouw.
And what are the labels? What are the labels? What are they being called? Under which circumstances? I'll tell you why I'm asking this question, Prof. I'm asking this question because I'm wanting to get a sense as to what it is that you are, at a practical sense. Because I hear you at a philosophical sense. What I'm trying to get my mind around is the practicalities of the philosophy that you're expressing. Under which circumstances is it, for example, and I've seen this. I've watched how certain members of certain black communities have found a connection with certain members of the Afrikaner community through AfriForum, for example. Certain chiefs, for example, who are working very closely with AfriForum in the cross-pollination of farming skills, right? The development of, better ways, more modern ways of farming. So there are certain rural communities that have found partnerships, for example, with AfriForum. I know, for example, that in the areas around Kuruman and the Northern Cape, there are people who happen to be black that are doing business deals with people from Oranje. And that seems to be thriving. Is that the kind of scenario you're talking about?
Most definitely. But also, I think you are aware that very recently, Jacob Zuma, as a former president, has been invited by an Afrikaner.
By the Afrikaner Leadership Forum, where he was dancing there. Yeah, I saw that.
Yes, yes, yes. And when you look at that, the first question that you get is, those who invited him, what are they trying to do? And it's that kind of things. And it's very commendable and very courageous. And I think it has to happen very often, where the Freedom Front member should say, no, but we want to speak to President Ramaphosa, the leader of the African National Congress, in his capacity as a government leader, and we want to hear going forward? Where is he going to take the country? But there have also been many, many, many contexts where in a union context, the worker, labor relations context, industrial relations context, where you will find that certain leaders of trade unions were at least understand that why a company have taken a certain stance on perhaps, raising the annual increment, salary increments. And yet certain leaders will be labeled as now being anti-black because they are siding on or agreeing with management, whereas reality actually dictates that the moment if you go beyond a certain percentage in terms of the salary increment, there will be huge implications for, securing the jobs of people. And there have been many instances while I was discussing South Africans, because my focus area has always been my speciality area is on community representation, and also how certain leaders who will spend their own money to try and go and unite a certain community will be labeled as being anti-revolutionary. And the question is, yes, I do understand the fundamental challenges that we still face as South Africa, because I think it would be naive of me to think that we have already reached a stage where we can say we are the so-called rainbow nation. We haven't yet reached that. But fact of the matter is, to what extent are we going to support and embrace individuals and even as a collective take a stand to say we know when certain political leaders are going wrong? Like recently, I've heard some pronouncements that from leaders from a certain party that if it doesn't go our way, we will definitely take up arms to try and advance our view. And that's where I strongly believe that our collective agency should come in to say, but how do we protect and advance human rights in this particular instance? And we're not going to dictate to people to which parties they should belong, but I think it's incumbent on us also to educate people to say, there are moments where you need to support your organizations, but there are moments where you also have to take the interest of your country at heart and not just follow suit,
So I hear you, Prof. And again, I'm going to bring what I call different schools of thought. But by the way, I don't want to hoard the prof. Please join us in this conversation. The lines are open. Join us, Professor Sethulego Matebesi. He's academic head of department of sociology at the University of the Free State. And he's written an opinion piece entitled Human Rights, This and That, Whose Perspective Matters. Prof, you more than anyone else in this conversation will be aware of the fact that there are different schools of thought as to the thrust of any political movement. And that's probably why we have different political movements and different political ideologies in South Africa. There are those who are integrationists, people who believe that South Africa's future is going to be best secured and the prosperity will come about as a result of integrationism. Everybody really working together and so forth. Then there are others who say integrationism is a cop-out from the historical mission of trying to right the wrongs of colonialism and apartheid, which were ideologies and legislative projects of white supremacy. And the idea of integrationism is nothing more than apologists who have bought into the idea of white supremacy, have become comfortable in it, and therefore call that integrationism. Whereas there are those who will argue that we are revolutionaries. We want to overturn the normality of integrationism, because integrationism is nothing more than the normalization of white supremacy and whiteness. And therefore, ours is to disrupt, to change completely the complexion and the structural dominance that come from white supremacy, that have normalized life in such a way that you would think that this is the way things ought to be, when in fact we are still in the reality of the fact that two black men are having a conversation in English about the issue of racism on the African continent. That a reality has been created that has been normalized to the point where we as Africans can't even see the fact that we are so dominated, so conquered, that a reality that is most comfortable to whiteness has become our normality. And therefore, ours is to disrupt that through revolutionary, ideological, and political movements such that would change that reality. And so this idea of working towards each other and with each other of integrationism needs to be rejected. So I'm sure you know that there are those kinds of schools of thought. Is therefore the idea that we should be tolerant, be working with each other, and have Jacob Zuma at the Afrikaner leadership situation singing and dancing for them? Is that what we should be having? Or should we be having a situation where somebody says, no, this stronger together idea of, yeah, we love rugby and Siya Kolisi is nonsense, because rugby, as it is now being used, is to pacify the revolutionary spirit. Professor Matebesi?
Yes, a very, very fundamental, yet once again, a very profound question. That is not what I and the focus of the opinion piece is all about. Not at all. Mm-hmm. You will have situations, and that's why I say we should never rest on our laurels to confront the tentacles of racism and injustices wherever it happens. If you look at South Africa today, and that's why some of us are going with the label of being counter-revolutionaries. And I've been asking, but where is the revolution? Because there's no revolution on service delivery. Because if you look at the word of revolution, it's very potent. It's almost like a complete industrialization. And that has not been happening in South Africa. What we're asking for, what I'm calling for, is that in instances where communities and people, individuals, across the racial group divide, they found themselves and they want to confront. Remember, I know what we're going to label this, is that even white people are being labeled as, you know, sometimes when they reach out to, black people.
They are called KBs.
Yes. they now are, you know, what are you trying to do? And we've been exposed to that. But I'm trying to say, but where are we going to bridge the gap? Yes, you've got the activists on this side to say we don't want to be pacified by this whiting. But at the end of the day, what is going to happen?
No, in fact, I'm receiving calls now. I mean, not calls, but messages from, I don't know who this is. He loves the show because he's always participating. He sends me SMSs, so I can't acknowledge him. He loves the show because he participates in the conversations. But his whole approach is that, in fact, he says, yeah, right, the usual codswallop. Never mind world record rape, murder, road slaughter, corruption and total collapse. Some human rights, he argues. He continues to say the nightly Masango mantra again. In the face of English dominance, they deserve their spot in institutions. He says not to be accommodative of the other, but to steal the other's institutions and initiative and innovations, ingenuity, etc., etc. And I understand him to be saying that, yeah, you blacks, man, you steal our institutions. You rape. You do all of these things. He loves the show. We love him too. We think his opinions are a little outdated, but he never signs off his message. So those people exist in this country. I'm aware of the fact that there are hardliners in the white community that look at those people who are white, who are reaching out to black people as people who've sold out. I told you about the term KB. Maybe one day we'll talk about exactly what that is, but we hear of those realities. So I agree with you, Prof, that on both sides of the discourse, there are hardliners, there are people who believe certain things, and they label whoever are in the middle of that conversation certain names and so forth. That is to be understood. My question to you, though, is, there's a historical context here that some people are insisting on, that says that it has delivered an unjust and unequal scrambled egg that is very difficult to unscramble. What is Professor Setulego Matebesi saying? Is he saying that we should just go with the flow as things are and call out sporadic moments of overt racism? Or does he realize and is he aware of the fact that South Africa, this country, is a country that was built on the foundations of inequality, of racism? And that is the revolutionary duty of those who want to unseat and unsettle racism to disrupt that. I hope I make sense, Prof.
No. You make perfect sense, and I really enjoy the show and the frank and your frankness because very difficult conversations that we have to have. This is definitely not where I am going. What I'm trying to say, the few on the other side, we've seen the light. What are we going to do with them while we're trying to fight all these injustices? And that's what I'm calling about for, to say, how do we take along the few? And they're very few from the other side, and even amongst ourselves. And I'm talking about black people because Ngumtwana, Ngumzulu, and if I don't respond to you along your ethnic lines, along your cultural lines, then I'm started being labeled. That's at the heart of human rights. It's about respecting and understanding that we are different as individuals. It's about just being white or black. But even if that is the case, how do we take along those that their eyes have opened to fight the very same injustices that we are talking about that? And I want to come back to this thing. What we have experienced is a very, very traumatic situation. And nobody can tell that after 30 years, we should now suddenly forget about that. And that's why I'm asking the question, what happened to our collective agency? Why are we where we are? Why do we still have a situation where so many communities are battling to have access to clean water 3 decades after democracy, a basic fundamental right, because we have glorified our political leaders. And what the opinion piece is calling for is to say there are black people, there are white people, even if they are in the minority, who perhaps their eyes have opened to say, here is South Africa. Huge injustices. Yep. But how do we collectively fight and advance and enshrine and protect what we have, the little that we have about what is still left of our democracy? And remember, so many people, and that's why we've got this public holiday, Human Rights Day, Shabdo Day, because so many people have lost their lives. And that's why it's so easy for people across the racial divide to treat today as a normal day. And it's only once we realize the sacrifices that have been made. And I don't think I'm calling for where black people now, and I'm going to be quite blunt here, suddenly now just have to stop and embrace whiteness, support whiteness. That is not that. But the question is, yes, we continue with the struggle to fight the injustices, because there are many injustices that we still face. But how do we take along those on the racial, on the cultural, ethnic, religious divide? Because there are still so many battles that are being fought along these divides. And we need to bridge that as Africans to be able to fight these injustices that we face.
Prof, should your advice be taken by the greater majority of South Africans, regardless of what color they are, what do you think that would deliver?
No, it will be a starting point. Fact of the matter is, I'm a sociologist, and we're not going to experience reality in 10, 15, 30, 2 years' time. We are faced with reality today. We have seen on numerous occasions where there are black and white people at some schools. What is happening? Many schools. Racial intolerance and all that. So what my opinion piece is calling for is that in instances where there are multicultural groups, let us advance and fight for the injustices that there are. But let us try to also take those that we are fighting. Let us open their eyes. Let us open their minds. And the ones that have seen the light, let us take them along so that they should go back and at the end of the day convince the others to say, this is the right way to go. Because If we don't try to do that, I don't say we're fighting a losing battle. We can completely disregard them. But my question has been, what do we do to those who have seen the light? Do we embrace them or not, or completely just shrug them off?
What is seeing the light?
Seeing the light that we can't tolerate dominance by whiteness. We can't tolerate a situation where we have been oppressed by a white regime in the past. And that's why black people respond to white people in the way they respond. But the ones that have seen the light from the white population, the light, seeing the light in terms of, yes, perhaps there have been who understand the sufferings,
Prof,
the vulnerability of black people.
Yeah, we've run out.
The injustices.
Prof, we've run out of time. How do people find the article?
No, it's going to be very difficult to even try to respond to that. But
no, I'm talking about the opinion piece. Where can people find it to read it for themselves?
It should be on the university website. I've seen some leading newspapers have published that.
All right.
So it's readily available.
Professor Setulego Matebesi, thank you very much for joining us. Academic Head of Department of Sociology at the University of the Free State. The opinion piece is on News 24, and it's entitled Human Rights, This and That, Whose Perspective Matters.